This interview is being conducted for Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium Sewer Upgrades in Fort Yukon, Alaska, 2012. The interviewer is Sarah Corbin. Paul Herbert is being interviewed in Fairbanks, Alaska, November 16th, 2012.
I was born in Fort Yukon a long time ago. 1947.
Can you tell me about where your first few years living in Fort Yukon?
No. I was born there, and then we went back to Schumann House, where I was raised. So pretty much all at Schumann House after I was born. So kind of grew up in the woods.
And can you tell me about going into Fort Yukon each year?
Yeah, we used to go every year in June to Fort Yukon. Right after the 4th of July, we used to go back to Schumann House and stay there till the next June. And sometimes we'd come out for Christmas and New Year to Fort Yukon or Chalkeetsuk. So, and then Chalkeetsuk is not too far, it's like 20, 25 miles from Schumann House. And we traveled back and forth with dogs. So when Christmas rolls around, if my grandfather and grandmother wants to go to Chalkeetsuk, well, we go. And with dog team back then.
And were you and your grandparents running a trap line at Schumann House?
Or? Yeah, he was old and he just lived there. And he didn't trap anymore because he was too old. But my uncles and my dad's dad, I guess father, he was still trapping, and he's my grandfather. And then my great-grandfather is what I'm talking about, that if they do what they want to do, and the people, you know, meaning my uncles and everybody that lived there, if my grandfather, my great-grandfather and grandmother wants to go to Chalkeetsuk for Christmas, they go. And if not, they stay.
How many people were living at Schumann House in your family?
Oh, just a family. Maybe, I don't know, 10 people at the most.
And when did you start trapping?
Geez, when I was really young, 9, 10, 9, 8, 9. I remember my grandmother used to set the trap for me at the house, and then I'd take it out and set it, because I couldn't open the trap by myself. It was too hard to open. So she'd set the trap, and then I'd take the toggle and the trap, and then I'd go and set it. And that time I used to go for squirrel, because there was a lot of squirrels, and I'd go after a squirrel. I'd shoot them and I trap them. But then, back then, trapping was a big thing. I mean, that's where they made money. So traps is hard to get, and they let me have one trap. And that one little trap, man, I set it in 100 different places in 1 year, you know, in a winter. So I used to go every day, and I snare them. I'd make rabbit snares for squirrel. And then I found out how to catch them, and I catch a whole bunch of squirrel. And then evening time, that's kind of a pastime thing, because you skin those little critters and you put them on stretcher and dry them. And then you got to turn them after they dry. And it's kind of entertainment in the evening time to, you know, so you don't go to sleep too early and you get up too early. So that was a thing we did.
What would you do with your squirrel?
I sold them for 10 cents.
Who bought them?
You sell them in a store. And Chalkeetsuk had a store. They had a, I don't even know who owned the dang store. Native Village, or no, the corporation maybe, or I don't know, they didn't have corporation back then, but I don't know who had the store, somebody did. And they paid 10 cents for squirrel skin. And I remember one time before Christmas, I caught 100 squirrels. And, 10 bucks.
You said that sometimes you would go into Fort Yukon at Christmas time. Was that to see people at Christmas, or was it to sell furs, or?
Well, both. They sell fur, and they go, I don't know, party, I guess. And, you know, be with people, and then there's potlatch going on, and there's dance going on, you know, a good time for the holidays, eh? And Christmas and New Year's is a big thing, you know, among the people, and it still is, so they dance and celebrate.
And can you tell me about going there in the summer and spending the month in June there?
Where we go, see, my experience with that is like going to the movie. You go there with a dollar, and you go to a movie, you could buy a whole bunch of stuff with just a dollar, you know? Back then, you'd buy three big old candy bars for a quarter, you know? And I'd go to the movie, and I'd still have change left when I get out of there, and I'd have me some candy and pop, and you still have money left over. Now you can't even buy a can of pop anymore in Fort Yukon for a dollar. It's more than a dollar.
Yeah.
And candy bar nowadays is, what, about that big? Back then it was just real big, you know? So time has changed quite a bit.
Do you remember going into the stores and what sort of things the stores sold in Fort Yukon when you were a kid?
Yeah, pretty much just what was needed, I guess. And a lot of the stuff they don't have today has been sold then, you know. And back then, trapping was big, so they had a lot of supplies, like, you know, trapping supplies and you know, a lot of food, clothing.
Would you and your family keep some of your skins? You told me that your grandmother tanned a lot of hides, of moose hides, so, and you helped her. Would you keep some moose hides and some skins and make boots and parkas each year?
She tanned them, and, you know, everybody did that them days. A lot of people tanned the moose hide, and if you kill a moose and you didn't bring the hide in, you get, you know, they get mad at you, and you got to go back out and get it. And if you cut a hole in the moose hide, you get mad at too. So you got to be careful when you skin it and bring the hide in, and then they make, you know, clothing out of it, boots and mittens.
How would your grandmother tan a hide? What was her process?
Oh, geez, it's a long process to tan a moose hide. First, you got to cut the hair off, and then just after you cut the hair off, just under the hair, there's a black layer of, I don't know what, skin or there's a black layer. Okay, you got to take that off, and they use a scraper. They put it on the pole, like a fleshing pole. Okay, they put it on that, and they use a knife with handles on both sides, and they have a thing of water, like maybe, you know, pan of water, and they put water on it, and they kind of shave that black stuff off till the skin is all white. And then on the back side, on the inside of the hide, there's a layer of meat. And then they turn that skin over, and then they use a different tool made out of moose leg, you know, with a knee on it or whatever, and it dried like that, and it's heavy, you know, and then they sharpen the bone, and they take that meat off of it, and then they soak it So to get that blood out of it, he soaks his hide. And then they have a place for it, so they cut little holes along the edge of the hide. Little, I don't know, maybe inch and a half holes all the way around the side. So that they use that to, if you have to wring that hide out. And the way they do that is they stick it in little holes, you know, they use little pegs, mm-hmm. peg kind of thing, and they use that, those little holes on the side of the hide, and they pin it to the wall maybe or wherever, and they put a stick through a bigger piece, maybe 3 feet, 2 feet, I don't know how long it was, and then they twist it. And that way that it wrings the water out of the hide. And they keep doing that. And then from there, they go to a brine. They make a brine out of brain, you know, the moose brain,
mm-hmm.
and soap. So then they soak that moose hide in there and goof around with it there. And then from there, they keep messing with it, and then from that brine made out of moose brain and soap, they take it out of there, they wring it and let it dry, and then they scrape it with a scraper. Scrape it. And you keep doing that, you keep scraping it till it's nice and soft. And it dries like that, and it's nice and real soft, it's tanned. Okay, and then from there, they with the holes on the side of the thing, they lace it up with string. Usually, hardly any string around. In them days, they use pieces of leather hide, make a rope out of it. Like it's just a piece of leather. Okay, they lace it, and then on the bottom part of it, they put canvas maybe 2 feet up, so that canvas, it keep the heat away from the hide. So if you put the skin, the hide too close to the fire, it shrink the skin.
Mm.
So they have to have it off the ground maybe 2 feet, 3 feet, and to smoke it, to make it brown, like, you know, like this.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they do it. They put fire under, not fire, but just smoke, and they use rotten wood. Mm-hmm. And me and my grandmother, they used to go around with gunny sack and axe and check all the stumps, and they don't get just any rotten wood. They want the color and the texture in the rotten wood. And they just don't get any.
What's the right color and texture of rotten wood for smoking?
Well, my grandmother used to get that tan looking stuff, a certain kind. And she'd chop into a rotten part of the log, and she'd twist the axe a certain way, and knock a chunk out of it, and she'd look at it. And if it's not the right color, well, we go on to the next.
Mm. Is that like when it's dry and powdery rock?
Well, it's dry, but it's not powdery.
Mm.
Chunks, you can knock it off in chunks, and they do that. And then when she make a fire, she make the fire in a can or something, you know, old dog pot or something, and she make the fire and let it burn till there's coal, okay, it's just coal. And then she put that stuff on top of it, so it's not too hot, it's just enough to make smoke. So she put that under there and she watched it real close, because if there's a flame, they take it out of there and put the flame out. So it's just smoke. And then she feels the hide, so it don't get too hot. So it and you gotta stay there and watch it till it's done. And it don't take long to do it. I don't remember it, you know, it didn't take long.
So it's already pretty well dry by the time she starts to smoke it? Or is it still a little wet?
It's dry.
It's dry.
It's dry and it's tanned.
Wow.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
So only thing she's doing is she's coloring it,
mm-hmm.
the color. And I think what they do is they color the outside of the hide. You know, like there's two parts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, inside and outside. Okay, the outside is where they they brown that. I mean, you know, they make the color on the outside of the hide because that's the toughest part of the hide, is the outside. So I don't know how she knows after doing all that. I don't know how she knows what size is what size. So I couldn't tell.
That's amazing. That's such an amazing long process.
Yeah, a lot of work. It go for days doing that, you know. I mean, you know, maybe a week of good work, you know. And I remember standing there trying to bring all the water out of that thing. But it's good. It looked pretty when you make boots out of it, or mittens, or whatever else they make out of it.
Yeah.
Now, what do you say, it cost $2,000 for a tan hide?
That's what I heard.
Golly.
But that's a lot of work, so I can see why it costs, why it costs so much money.
But now they got chemicals. You could put that hide in there, and you could tan it really easy like that.
Yeah.
I tan hides like that with stuff I made out of battery acids and salt and stuff. And it come out, you know, soft like fabric, you know?
Wow. So you live in what used to be a store, Freddie DeMere's store? Is Freddie DeMere's store? That was, your house used to be a store?
Yeah.
When did you buy it?
I don't remember, 1973.
Do you remember when it was a store?
No. So it's a real old house.
Which stores in Fort Yukon did your family usually sell their fur to?
Alaska Commercial, back then. I think it was called Northern Commercial then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Until not recently, they changed the name to Alaska Commercial. So it used to be Northern Commercial Company. And we sold our fur. And then what they did then, they traded. Back then, they, I guess they call it stake. They get a whole bunch of stuff on credit, and they go out like we did. We went out, and we hustle, trap, and the money you made, we bring it back to that store, you paid your bill, and what money you got left is profit.
Do you remember that your family would usually get a little bit of cash money, or did you usually take all of your payment in exchange for goods at the store?
Yeah, that's what happened. They exchanged.
Always
goods for
exchanging.
The store, yeah. And not counting what my grandfather drank up. You
know. When you sold your squirrel and you had 100 squirrels, did you also get goods at a store in Chalkeetsuk, or did you get money?
Yeah, I buy candy and Cracker Jacks and, you know, cookies and stuff like that, you know, because we don't get too much of that living in the woods. You don't get candy, you don't get Cracker Jack or cookies, you know. Every now and then my grandmother make cookies, but not all the time. And it's always oatmeal cookies, because oatmeal is what we have. Or donuts. That's only two things we, you know, sweet. And pie, sometimes we get pie. Of berries.
When you grew up, did you just naturally become a trapper, or did you do other work for cash money? Like when you were sort of a teenager, early 20s? mid-20s?
I went to work after that, you know, because, well, trapping, it just kind of fell into it. Eh? It was all around me when I was a young kid, and I did that, and I know how to do that real good. So that's what I did for a long time. And then when I finally went to work, well, I stayed with work and worked and worked and worked and worked and still working.
You're still trapping too.
Yeah, I'm still trapping too. So, but trapping now, I do it for fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I love doing it, and it brings money, but you know, I don't want to make big profit. I just want to do it to be doing it, you know.
Do you remember Ivor Peterson's store?
Yeah.
What
we
do you
used to buy double decker ice cream for quarter.
Was that the ice cream that he made there?
He made it himself, yeah.
What flavors did you like?
Oh, there was not too many choices. I think there was strawberry and vanilla. Those two flavors, that's all they had. So he had. And I don't even know how he did that, because it was hard to, back then it was, you know, not too many things. But it was good. When we were kids, it was good. On a hot day, you go in there with a quarter and you get a double-decker ice cream.
Sounds like a pretty good treat.
Yeah. Now you do that down here, I think it's $3 for a cone. You know? And that's only for a small cone. It's $3 here in Fairbanks. In Fort Yukon, I think it's like $4 for one scoop, you know?
What do you remember about, what else do you remember about Ivor's store? What sorts of other things did he sell?
I remember it was junky. I mean, excuse my language, but he knew where everything is at. You ask for something and he'd go over there and dig among junk and he'd yank it out of there and sell it to you. I remember that. And then it was a kind of a gathering place. A lot of people go there just to sit around and shoot the breeze, tell stories. It was always fun to do that. I mean, I never told any stories because I never had any, but you listen to old people telling stories, you know, and I used to like to hang around listening to them, you know.
Were there places to sit, or would people stand around?
Oh, they just sit on a counter.
Oh.
He had counter on both sides of the store, inside, both uh-huh. sides, and people just jump up on the counter and sit around. Some people stand around by the stove and, you know, tell stories. And it was the same way with Jimmy Carroll's store. That was a good store. I mean, you know, he had a little store. And a lot of old folks hanging around there, you know, telling stories. And I don't know what they do, talk about trapping and fishing and hunting, I guess.
Do you remember the barges coming in?
Yeah, that was a big thing. You could hear that sucker 20 miles away, you know, that thing was coming, you know. And it was a big thing because they get the fresh stuff, you know, like apples and oranges and potatoes and onions. And man, I remember used to taste so good after you've been living in the woods for over a year, and when you come out and you get that potatoes and onions cooked together, oh man, that was so good. And I still like that. I could, you know, cook the onions and potatoes together, and I still like it, you know. But back then, when you get fresh something fresh like that, it tasted so good.